Parker.
And you're listening to
WGXC Acra
Hudson
Catskill 90.7 FM.
Amazing! Kemp Hudson Players, Happiness in the Spotlight. Hello, this is Kelly McCon from Kemp Hudson. The Kemp Hudson Players Theater Troupe will present an encore presentation of their original play, Happiness in the Spotlight. Have you ever asked yourself, what makes you happy? You would be intrigued to see what our cast finds within the backdrop of an awards ceremony where everyone is dressed to the nines. Through engaging, funny, and poignant scenes, this play combines multimedia pieces along with live action. The performance is free and will be filmed in front of a live audience, so come and play a role in bringing the live action theater experience to the movie screen. Hope to see you there. Friday, November 10th at 6 p.m. at Hudson Hall.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events. At the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael and Lisa Lindsay Hogg of Claverick, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Voting this fall begins October 28th, and Alex Galt at Johnson News Service reports there are two constitutional amendments on the back of this year's ballots. Both questions only ask about minor changes to already established rules. One asks voters if they support a technical change to the constitutional debt limit set for small city school districts, and the other is an extension to a change made for debt limits on local sewer projects. Hudson has the most stake locally, as Proposal 1 asks voters if they support a change to the state constitution for small city school districts, and Hudson is one of the few in New York. Currently, Hudson Schools, with a total taxable value of $1.016 billion, have a debt limit of about $50.8 million. A yes vote on Proposal 1 would allow the school to double that to the same percentage as most other schools around the state. The two questions are the only statewide issues on the ballot this fall that is crowded with many local elections. With limited locations and hours, voting begins October 28th through November 5th and then expands to all precinct locations on November 7th. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Raga Justin reports in the Times Union that on October 25th, seven former female inmates held at jails in Albany and Rensselaer counties filed lawsuits alleging repeated sexual abuse from multiple former employees of each county sheriff's office. Five lawsuits were filed in State Supreme Court in Albany and two in State Supreme Court in Troy by attorneys from the New York City-based law firm Slater, Slater & Shulman. The lawsuit alleges on-duty correction officers initiated sexual advances with women under their charge, physically groping them, threatening them, or coercing them to perform sex acts. Many of the women said they received extra food or food bought from outside the correctional facilities. Many of the women alleged the attacks occurred when they were isolated in showers or search rooms. Each of the seven lawsuits seek damages of up to $20 million for each petitioner. Adam Slater, an attorney handling these cases, said, and I quote, "For decades, there's been an environment of rapid and unchecked sexual violence. It was episodic. It was systematic. But even worse, it wasn't really a secret. They adopted a perverse code of silence that extended to many of the correctional staff as well as the high-ranking officials. So the culture of sexual abuse in the New York State prison system was just rampant," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Rick Collin reports in the Times Union that Representative Pat Ryan has written to the U.S. Coast Guard asking for more information about why the military branch, which regulates Hudson River navigation, changed its rules allowing large ships and barges to anchor in spots closed because of local complaints and environmental concerns. Ryan said, and I quote, "Indefinitely parking dangerous oil barges on the Hudson is a threat to the health and safety of our kids, the more than 100,000 people who rely on the river for their drinking water, and our entire ecosystem. I am demanding the Coast Guard uphold the anchoring ban on the Hudson," end quote. 3 years ago, local activists and environmental groups successfully lobbied to block large ships and barges from parking on the Hudson River locally. Over the summer, the Coast Guard changed the boundaries of the Port of New York, allowing large barges and ships to anchor north of the Mario Cuomo Bridge. In August, Ryan wrote to Captain Zeta Merchant, sector commander for the Coast Guard, saying, and I quote, "As a member of Congress representing the Hudson River, I am concerned with the impact that this change would have on my constituents, the natural resources of the region, and the importance of the Hudson River in facilitating commerce," end quote. The Coast Guard, in its reply, said that they were looking to clarify boundaries and regulations regarding the Port of New York, but Ryan said that answer was inadequate. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, October 27th. Local early morning temperatures range from 51 degrees in Steventown to 59 in Copake. Regional average soil temperature is 56 degrees. Smoke has entered the area again. This time it's blown back ashore from fires in Virginia. About 3 micrograms per cubic meter will be floating around, and sensitive people may notice. Most of us should be okay. Otherwise, it should be a pretty nice day. Calm, steady winds should moderate the mostly sunny skies, and we get a high temperature of 79 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 59 degrees. Saturday rounds out the last of the nice days you are likely to see upper 70s for a while. Saturday hits 75 in the afternoon. Winds will get a bit stiff, so dress in layers just in case. And 46 chilly degrees overnight takes us into a Sunday that will be cloudy, rainy, and not warm at all. High of 49 is all that's expected. Monday, the rain should finally taper off by dark and we get a high of 52. And then, frost warnings will likely start getting issued. So enjoy that tide schedule while it's still around. High tide happens at 2:02 a.m., low tide at 8:37 a.m., high tide again at 2:32 p.m., then low tide once again at 9:10 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 55 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 5:44 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma ribbon collision is expected on Sunday, could cause some geomagnetic unrest. Plasma winds will be average at 411 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently don't bother, and there are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 57, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. You're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
All right, WGXC listeners, welcome to Live by Life, hosted by the Camp Hill Hudson Media Group. Who's in the studio here with me?
I'm Kelly Ann McCon.
Of course.
I am Matthew Whitney Harrington.
Dan Thomas Wachowski.
Nice. We have a play coming up at Hudson Hall. Yeah?
Yep.
Friday, November 10th, 6 p.m. at Hudson Hall. What is the show?
It's called Happiness in the Spotlight.
Happiness Spotlight is about celebrate around you guys and celebrate about your own happiness. I am a main host.
And we want to promote the show coming up, though, and tell people what it's about, right?
So basically, the show, I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but I play a stage manager.
A stage manager, yes.
In England, people say manager.
Oh, is that how it's been pronounced these
days?
Yes,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My take on the play is basically about what Matthew was saying, finding happiness in your community and being joyful and happy and just remember to be happy, not negative, or just be positive in life in general.
And Matthew's character goes about town, interviews people, notable figures in Hudson, asking them what makes them happy.
Yep.
Yeah. And
I myself have a cool sign and a headset and a gold jacket. So please come check it out.
Come check it out. It's an encore presentation. Yours truly will be dressed all in gold.
Now with this one, can anybody come, or do you have to get tickets for it, or is this filming, or what?
Thank you for asking. The performance is free, and they should contact Jody Brooks at camphillhudson.org. Let me say that again.
J-O-D-Y.
J-O-D-Y-B-R-O-O-K-E-S at camphillhudson.org to get your free tickets. This performance will be filmed in front of you, the audience, because we want to showcase our work to the World Wide Web and beyond. So I
came to the benefit one, so I'm definitely going to come to this one on November 10th.
Yeah,
Kelly, yeah.
Yeah, right. Mikani, Kelly, nice.
And you're also in the play, are you not, Kelly? You also are in the video that Matthew shoots.
Oh, I want to talk about that, yes. But
also, you play Kelly Bell. That's actually the same as Tinkerbell, is that correct?
Right, and I hope at the benefit that I want to sit in the way back again like I did there. I hope I can sit in the kind of like in the middle.
Wherever you want, Kelly. I mean,
is there like any reserved seating or whatnot, or is it all open seating?
It's all open seating.
It's open seating.
Open seating, and it starts again. Let's give the date and the time.
November 10th, Friday, November 10th at 6 p.m. at Hudson Hall.
Hudson Hall, email
Jody Brooks at Camp Hill Hudson. Camphillhudson.org. I almost said.
And my plot is to have crisis, and the end of the show, I find my happiness. And it'd be nice to see me. I am a main host of Kim Hussey Players, and we'd love to see you there.
That was a long-winded thing. I almost fell asleep.
Hope to see you there.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Just in time for Halloween, Michigan GOP legislators are attempting to reanimate the rejected independent state legislature theory to invalidate a voting rights citizen ballot initiative passed in 2022. Haven't we seen this horror movie before? Michigan's voters passed Proposition 2 with 60% of the vote in 2022. The citizen ballot initiative enshrined early voting, no excuse absentee, automatic voter registration, protections for poll workers from harassment, and other reforms into the state constitution. Earlier this year, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected an argument by the North Carolina legislature in Moore v. Harper that a fringe interpretation of the U.S. Constitution allowed it complete control of election law, trumping gubernatorial vetoes and the courts. Democracy Docket reports that the Michigan GOP legislators are arguing in federal district court that the Prop 2 citizen ballot initiative undermined the power of the Michigan legislature and must be invalidated. They are further asking the court to prohibit any future citizen initiatives which regulate, quote, the time, place, and manner of federal elections, unquote, a role granted to state legislatures in the Elections Clause. While the case is not likely to go far, there are members of the U.S. Supreme Court who embrace the ISL theory and may like to consider a related case. We'll keep watch for the monster behind the door. Find the case and analysis at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This city did not deserve this terrible assault on its citizens, on its peace of mind, on its sense of security. No city does. No state, no people.
Maine Governor Janet Mills confirmed the toll from the Lewiston mass shooting is 18 killed and 13 injured. Law enforcement is still looking for a person of interest. They describe 40-year-old firearms instructor Robert Card as armed and dangerous. The White House is calling on newly elected House Speaker Mike Johnson to get to work and ban assault weapons. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says Congress knows what would make a real difference.
It does not have to be this way. It's within Congress's power to pass legislation that will make our streets safer, that will make our community safer, that will make our schools safer.
On social media, Maine native and author Stephen King is calling for people to stop electing apologists for murder. Lawmakers joined family members of Israeli hostages on Capitol Hill to call for their release. Ruby Hen is the father of 19-year-old soldier Itai Hen, who hasn't been seen since the start of the war.
Itai is a very active kid. He plays a lot of basketball. He contributes a lot to the community. I like to hope that, like myself as a New Yorker, he has a tough New York DNA.
An estimated 220 hostages are held by Hamas, a majority of them not Israelis. Meanwhile, with Gaza's health system failing, aid groups are calling for a humanitarian ceasefire. Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is moving for the censure of Michigan progressive Rashida Tlaib.
A resolution censuring Representative Rashida Tlaib for anti-Semitic activity, sympathizing with terrorist organizations, and leading an insurrection at the United States Capitol complex.
Tlaib says Green's resolution is unhinged and Islamophobic, but it poses questions for both Democrats who've criticized Tlaib's remarks on the war and for the new Speaker of the House. With another government funding deadline in mid-November, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is telling Republicans to take the threat of a shutdown off the table.
We have never given in to any Republican extreme ransom demand in the context of a potential government shutdown. We never will. It's a futile effort.
A federal judge in Georgia has ruled the state's electoral maps broke the Voting Rights Act by diluting the power of black citizens. The state legislature now has until early December to redraw them before the court steps in. Finally, today is National Civics Day. Charlie Hyde with the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site in Indianapolis says a civics education serves a real need, especially now.
It's all about encouraging public participation in our American system of self-government. If you understand how your government functions, then you can take a leadership role.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Brendan Donegan reporting for WGXC 90.7. Did you know that about 3,400 Armed Services veterans live in Columbia County and about 3,000 live in Greene? That's a lot of people. I didn't know these facts till I checked the 2020 U.S. Census data, which recently brought me to the Veterans Food Pantry in Greenport in Columbia County. I'm here with Patsy Leader and Polly Crosby, the coordinators of the pantry. Hi, Pat and Polly. What got you interested in managing the Veterans Food Pantry?
Well, for myself, Gary Flaherty, I'm a volunteer here. Gary Flaherty's known me because I was very involved with him, no matter what he did with Veterans Affair. And he said, do you want to help and volunteer? And I always said yes to him. And here I am now, coordinator.
How about you, Polly?
My father was a World War II veteran, and he just really instilled a pride of the country and in veterans. And my husband volunteered while he was still in high school. He volunteered to serve in the Vietnam War. And when he finished his service in the Army, he reenlisted in the Navy for the Seabees. And veterans have always been such a vital part of my appreciation for sacrifices that people make for our country.
I see. When did the pantry open?
October 22nd. We're just a year now. We started with three shelves with maybe very little on them, and we formed a group called Widows of Veterans and Volunteers, and the widows and the veterans of man it and take care of it and run the pantry. We've grown out of our space, and we've had to move to a bigger space now. And now we are visited constantly by veterans and people that are in need. And we don't turn anybody away. If you can come through a pantry door, that's a lot of pride. And we make sure that they're taken care of.
Okay. How many people work here altogether?
We have over 30 volunteers and widows of veterans in our group. So we all sign up when available.
What is the connection to the county government? I know we have a Veterans Affairs Board or something.
Veterans Affairs does coordinate this with Sergeant Major Gary Flaherty, really. He's been running this for many years, and the county helps us with the rent for the building.
Does the pantry offer anything besides groceries?
We do, and the first thing people notice when they walk through our doors is that we don't have just shelves of food. We have some clothing. We have kitchen items, and several veterans have said it's like coming home because we do have so much to offer. We have personal care items. We have pet food, and we do have veterans who appreciate that so much that there's one veteran who, when he comes in the door, the first thing he does is to take the pet food out to his car, and then he will come back and shop for himself because that is his family, and he's so grateful that we can accommodate pets also.
So it's kind of like a one-stop place where they can find all their needs.
It truly is.
We try to do the best we can on filling it. We have kitchen items and silverware, just basic, and blankets. We have blankets and sheets. We have one veteran that came in and took a set of sheets because he had none on his bed. Mm-hmm. So it made us feel good.
Right. We have laundry detergent. We have, pretty much it is a one-stop pantry.
It's a great concept. Which items do you need more of as of today?
We always need meat. We have a couple local farmers that donate, but we always need meat. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start trying to get a little bit more into some butter and eggs. We have a couple farmers that give us eggs, but, you know, that's also their livelihood, so we don't want to take everything. We have basic food. We have microwave meals that they can just put in the microwave, off the shelf, and so forth. And we do have Thanksgiving meals we're going to start giving them come next month that are already cooked, and they just have to pop them in the microwave.
Do you have a date for that when you think you're going to
November the 15th, they're coming.
Okay. What's on your wish list to help the pantry to reach more vets?
Word of mouth is the best, but we really need to get it out there. I don't want anybody to feel bad about coming into the pantry. We have a very loving, caring group of people that will open arms and talk to you, joke with you, and make you feel at home.
Okay. With the warm weather coming, when people are stuck in their homes, they can call us, and we will deliver to homes to help people.
Okay. What do you think would surprise most listeners about the visitors to the pantry?
That there's a need, and there is a need. Okay. I don't think they realize we've had vets come in that, especially at the end of the month, we notice it more because they are out of money. They don't get full stipend from the government, and they need food mm-hmm. and clothing and a lot of different things. But they also come in and just say, can you help me? And mm-hmm. that's what we mean the most to us.
I believe
also it's our sincerity and our desire to not only help, but to show appreciation mm-hmm. for what they have.
We thank them for their service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's thankfulness in action. I mean, it's not just saying thank you for your service,
right,
but
definitely.
Here's something. Do you have to be a veteran to use the pantry?
If you walk in a door of a food pantry, you're in need.
Okay.
We mostly geared towards the veterans, but we've had some desperate people that came in that needed something to eat, pair of socks, a woman warm hat the other day. Mm-hmm. She wanted a hat. She was cold.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to turn anybody away. It's not the Christian way anyhow.
What is the address of the pantry and what are its hours?
We're located in the Bageltime building. It's right between ShopRite and Walmart, closer to the Walmart side.
In Greenport?
In Greenport, yes.
Okay. What are its hours?
We're open every Monday through Thursday from 9:30 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon.
But you can also come afterwards. There's a phone number on the door that you can call, and somebody from the office will come down and let you into the pantry.
Okay, thanks, Pat and Polly, for helping veterans and for being on WGXE 90.7.
Thank you.
Next, we have 2023 music from the album The Intrinsic Nature of Ship from jazz pianist Matthew Ship. This is Jazz Frequency from Matthew Ship. Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Ron Deutsch, who's directs New York Hosts for Fiscal Fairness, also is a consultant to a lot of labor, community, and faith groups around various economic justice issues. And we asked Ron to give us an update on next year's state budget. This is the point where Governor Hochul begins to put together her budget, which released a little bit in mid-January. As often is the case, looking at a pretty significant budget deficit, and as often the case, does not seem to want to raise any additional tax revenues, tax the rich, and may not even want to dip into the so-called rainy day fund. So Ron, what are we looking at in next year's state budget?
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Well, we're looking at some unfortunate numbers in next year's state budget. The Division of Budget has been projecting a budget gap totaling about $36 billion over the next 3 years. So basically, we're looking at about a budget gap of $9.1 billion next year, $13.9 billion for the following year, and $13.4 billion for the years after that. And the reason for that, according to the Division of Budget, has been decreasing tax revenue and decreasing federal aid. As you know, during the COVID years, we got a substantial amount of federal assistance to help us deal with the pandemic and its aftermath. A lot of that money is drying up. So, you know, our budget gaps are tending to increase now. So we need to figure out a way to close those budget gaps. Some of the good news is, as you were pointing out, you know, the state has put about $19.5 billion into this rainy day reserve fund. So that is, without a doubt, probably the most robust cash reserves that the state has ever had. So that would really help us, you know, weather these storms that we see coming. Because remember, the budget gap is basically the difference between revenue collection and spending. So, you know, spending is predicted to be higher than it's been in past years, and revenue seems to be down a bit, although the good news is that the revenue projections, actually, according to the comptroller's office, are coming in a bit higher than the Division of Budget had projected. It's still below 2022 levels, but it's not quite as bad as we would have thought. And it looks like if things continue in this fashion, the budget gap for next year would probably shrink to somewhere around $5 billion.
Now, that budget gap is based, my understanding, on sort of the existing spending pattern and commitments, and those New Yorkers who might say we need more funding for affordable housing or cleaning up various environmental problems, dealing with climate change, hunger, that probably they want some additional funding beyond what is the present spending projection?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, there's dramatic needs that still exist in New York that we're trying to address and that desperately need to be addressed. The least of certainly one of the most pressing issues that we have right now is the number of migrants coming to New York City and New York State. You know, we need to work on trying to provide services to these folks who are in desperate need. And that's, you know, potentially going to cost billions of dollars. And you couple that with Governor Hochul's, you know, desire to create more affordable housing, which is not cheap and needs to be done. And, you know, we have a lot of spending needs, but not a lot of revenue to meet those needs. So a lot of us talk about the need for increasing revenue at the state level, through a variety of different mechanisms that would ask the wealthiest New Yorkers to pay their fair share.
Well, maybe we could explore some of those. I will mention on climate, you know, there's a whole separate, you know, movement around climate that we've covered, such as the Climate Superfund Act, and the governor seems to be moving into some type of, you know, carbon pricing. But in terms of the other revenue issues, you know, what are some of the ways we could make the New York State tax revenue system a little bit fairer?
Well, we've been working on doing that over the last, say, decade or so. We've had some success, certainly, with the income tax and reconfiguring the income tax rate. So we ask folks making over $1 million, $5 million, and $25 million a year. Now, that's income that they're receiving. This is not net worth we're talking about. So, you know, we've raised those brackets or raised the rates on those brackets over the last few years. But those are set to expire in 2027. So I think at a minimum, one of the things we need to do is really extend that for at least another 5 years as we see these projected budget gaps looming. And some of those gaps, as you get into those out years past 2027, are the result of, you know, that millionaire's tax basically going away. You know, when we had post 9/11, we actually needed a substantial amount of revenue as well. And that was when people like Speaker Sheldon Silver and Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno actually came together and increased personal income tax rates over the objection and veto over of Governor Pataki. But there was a $500,000 tax bracket back then, which seemed to make sense as well. So I think we really do need to reevaluate our personal income tax structure to ensure that those at the top, you know, with the most means are in fact paying the most. Now, many people will say that all this does is drive millionaires out of New York. And we've heard a lot about migration patterns over the last few years. But the reality is we have more millionaires than we've ever had in New York State. And the people who are leaving are those who are lower income and middle income, who are really in search of more affordable housing options. And they're moving to the suburbs of New Jersey and Connecticut. I mean, everybody wants to make a big deal out of the fact that people are moving to Florida, which is true. But if you look at the numbers, more people are moving to, you know, New Jersey, Connecticut, and California when you add those three together than are moving to Florida. So this notion that somehow people are just fleeing to lower tax states is erroneous, and just kind of feeding into, you know, the myth of the moving millionaire.
Now, I know the years, you know, some people like yourself have said, well, one solution might be to, you know, we have a sales tax on a lot of stuff, but the old time stock transfer tax, which is a sales, very, very small sales tax on stocks. We've stopped collecting that decades ago, and that can, depending upon how Wall Street's doing, can be, you know, I guess $10-15 billion a year. Is that still a pipe dream that they're going to start making Wall Street kick in a little bit more?
Well, I don't think it's a pipe dream, but I think it's a heavy lift. And, you know, people like myself have been advocating for that for years. Local assembly member Phil Steck has really been a champion of this. And it's really long past time that we do this. I mean, think about the fact that this tax was in place between, say, 1910 and 1980. So for 70 years, we were collecting this and using those funds to, you know, help provide adequate spending levels for dramatic needs in New York State. And now, you know, since 1980, we're basically just rebating it back to stockbrokers. And it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, it's certainly a tax that we should be collecting. I mean, the wealthy, who are primarily the people that are purchasing stocks, you know, they have the means and the wherewithal to pay a small tax on the conveyance and transfer of stocks. So,
well, Ron, we're out of time. Any 10-second closing points you want to make?
I think that we need to make sure that we ask the wealthy to pay their fair share. And we need to make sure that we're not cutting spending at a time when people desperately need services.
Ron Deutsch on New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. We'll be right back.
song about a very big, strong, black, sexy Southern Baptist minister who thinks that he has his program all together until he runs up against a lady who shows him that he ain't got it together. His name is Reverend Dr. Lee. Reverend Lee. He went to the water and he prayed to the Lord about old Satan's daughter. Yeah, it seems in a dream, child, while he lay sleeping, she climbed in his bed, starts rubbing and she was twisting and turning. She was begging and pleading, loving and burning, panting and breathing. Reverend.